What's up, fellas? It's Bush here. We have tons of tools to get you ready to smoke your buffoon league mates in our redraft rankings manifesto. Whether you're looking for our consensus tiered-based rankings, top 200s, and by position, fantasy football news blurbs to keep you informed and find this year's Puka Nacua, risk ratings so you know how risky the draft picks you're spending are, the truth series so you can see how their 2023 season went, or you can compare our rankings to Sleeper, to ESPN, to Underdog, to Yahoo, to NFL, whichever platform you're drafting on, we have you covered this year with our Redraft Rankings Manifesto. Right now, you can get our draft guide for free by signing up on Underdog Fantasy using just $10 and using code FSE. If you already have an Underdog account or you can't play where you live, you can also head to flockfantasy.com. Use the code FSE for a 7-day free trial, 30% off any of the packages, and all of that is linked in the description of all of our videos if you need the links for that. All right, let's roll the pod. In fantasy football, opportunity cost can sometimes be everything. So today, I'm joined by Domain Fantasy Football, breaking down a player that we're fading early on in fantasy drafts because we got a similarly profiled player later on in fantasy drafts. Avery, I'll let you kick us off here. Who's a guy that you're fading early on in drafts and somebody that you think you can get a decent profile, similar profile later on?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm somewhat of a Twitter guy. And I was on Twitter recently, and I followed this guy, really smart, really good takes for the most part. His name's Corey. And, you know, he had this tweet, and he quote tweeted somebody about, you know, Dalvin Cook and how people thought he was going to affect Breece Hall. And people said, and you said, imagine thinking that Raheem Mostert is going to affect Devon Achane's production. And so naturally, when I was thinking who I was going to do for this video, I was like, you know what? Why don't we fade Devon Achane and just draft Raheem Mostert later? And look, let me defend it, because it's not like I don't think Devon Achane is going to be productive. Like, he's obviously going to be productive in that offense. Now, everybody would admit he's not going to be as efficient as he was last year, right? I mean, you're talking about he would be legit the best running back ever if he were to do what he did last year over an entire season. He'd be the running back one. It would be no question. He's going to take a step back from an efficiency standpoint, but from an opportunity standpoint in that offense, I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that you saw Raheem Mostert, who literally never did anything in his entire career, go to that offense and was able to produce as well as Devon Achane, as well as guys when they're on the field like Jeff Wilson. I mean, when you're looking at all these guys' efficiency metrics, when you're talking about a fantasy production standpoint, it's an offense that cultivates fantasy production for running backs. And so it's not that I don't like Devon Achane's price, because admittedly, especially in best ball formats, I've taken a fair amount of Devon Achane, even in the second round. I just think when you're playing in your normal redraft home leagues, I'm just as comfortable with the production I could potentially get from Raheem Mostert in the same offense as I am Devon Achane. Most of the reason for that is the situation year over year is mostly the same. I mean, they really didn't change a lot. Same coaching staff, same quarterback. They've pretty much got the same running back room. They added Jalen Wright. I personally don't think he's going to have a huge impact on that running back room. What I think it's Mostert. I think it's Achane. And I think both of those guys are going to get a fair amount of run, and I think they're both going to be productive. Now, I would probably, from a talent standpoint, I would probably prefer Achane, right? I think anybody would say that. With that being said, price is everything. That's the reason I'm like, you know what? If I want a piece of that Dolphins running back and I don't want both pieces, which I don't think drafting both pieces is a bad idea at these prices. I mean, getting both running backs in that offense at second and, what, eighth round price in some leagues, like, that's a pretty good deal. But I'm just thinking, like, you know, if I am going to only take one of these guys out of the Dolphins offense, I'm just going to take the cheaper one. It's literally, if they were flipped, I would take Achane. It's literally just taking the cheapest one. I love that offense. I want running backs in that offense. I just don't have a heavy preference on who I think is going to be like a workhorse this year, because I don't think Achane is a workhorse. I don't think Mostert needs to be a workhorse. And with Mostert, obviously, again, you're not going to have the same touchdown production as you did last year. He's not going to be probably a top five back this year. I think both of them have a chance to be productive. So I for me, it's just like, I'll take the cheaper one. So.
I think people are going to cry when they see Achane get them inside the red zone, and then he's taken off the field for Mostert to punch it in.
And vice versa. So,
yep.
Yeah. I mean, you got to get caught to get tackled inside the red zone. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, no, you're right. Like, he didn't get touched.
He doesn't get touched.
Year.
No, yeah. So, I mean, this channel, everybody watching this has known that we are Achane over Mostert. So it is good to hear the other side of the perspective there. You guys are obviously at cost Mostert over Achane. And for me, I love the projection of both of these guys. I love the offense. I want pieces of it. So I don't think it's an outrageous take whatsoever. I think having your preferences based on price, and you obviously prefer different profiles, probably where Achane is going, which also factors into it. So it definitely makes sense. Again, I obviously disagree. You guys know my stance on Achane. I think the efficiency that we saw from him as a rookie, that results in a volume increase. And Raheem Mostert, an older player, dealt with injuries, whatever. He's still going to be a part of the offense. Everything they've said is we're going to ride the hot hand. We're going to go with the, you know, committee approach, as we know McDaniel likes to do. I just think that won't last the whole season. I think that'll start out. And, you know, slowly but surely, Raheem Mostert will be maybe phased out in favor of Achane. But again, Achane's 188 pounds. Probably not going to handle 24 carries a game. Like, he's probably only going to get 18, 19 opportunities per game. I just think I prefer even Achane on 18, 19 opportunities per game than the risk profile that I see with Mostert because of the age, because of the fact that he's never really been an elite running back outside of last year at, like, 33 years old. But again, this offense elevates everybody. So Mostert being RB 16 in points per game this year wouldn't really shock me, even if Achane is RB 8 in points per game.
Correct. Yeah. And again, like, I think in a vacuum, like, which back do I like more? Which back do I think is probably going to be the best back there? I'd probably say Achane. It is legit all about price. Like, I just want the cheapest one. Like, the opportunity, like, who else can I get in the second round? Can I get pieces of other good offenses? And if I can take advantage of that, still get a Dolphins back later, I'm totally comfortable with that.
The whole point of this video is we're doing this is price sensitive, right? We're thinking of the bet we're making. You want the Dolphins backfield. Like, you can make a cheaper bet in the later rounds with Mostert. Nathan, let's pivot over to you. What are you thinking in terms of a player that you're kind of fading early on versus somebody that you can get later on?
Yeah, I didn't go into this season expecting this to be a huge take of mine, and then it kind of just happens by happenstance. Someone asked me in the comments, like, if I preferred this guy over that guy when I was comping them, and I was like, no, absolutely not. And then the more I thought about it, I was like, yeah, absolutely, yes, at price. I'm passing Chris Olave in the second round, and I'm taking Calvin Ridley four rounds later. Like, they had the exact same opportunity in 2023, and honestly, their situations aren't any better than the other heading into 2024. Calvin Ridley, plenty of questions. He needs to turn his targets into more receptions and more volume than last season. Chris Olave needs to somehow find a way to produce with Derek Carr throwing him the ball. It's not something against either of them as talents. I think both of them are very, very good NFL wide receivers. I have no issue with either of them, but that is why it ultimately comes down to a price situation where I would just rather have the cheapest guy. I mean, they both had 140 targets last year. Calvin Ridley only brought in 70 of those. 70. That is unbelievable. And that was not just his fault. Like, some of it was drops. People were saying, oh, drops. They were highlight drops. Like, he dropped two or three that would have been automatic touchdowns. Other than that, the rest of them were inaccurate balls. Trevor Lawrence was not good last year as a passer. Not consistent, that's for sure. And now you're going into an offense with Will Levis, who's, yes, is entirely unproven. But they brought in Callahan for a reason, to build around Will Levis. And they brought in Calvin Ridley for a reason, to support Will Levis and to be the top option there. Then you get pretty much the bonus of D-Hop getting injured to start the season. I think they're throwing Calvin Ridley into the fire, saying, hey, you just came off of a season where you hadn't played football for 2 years and you got 140 targets. We're going to give you the same amount this year and you're going to produce more.
Yeah, no, so Olave is difficult. We talked about this on the stream yesterday where Olave, the way he hits is he has a monster third year, takes another step as a player.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
The hard part is that, like, there's limiting factors in the offense, like Derek Carr is going to factor in the pass volume and things of that nature. And the scheme change could help, but I think the scheme change will do a whole lot more for Calvin Ridley in Tennessee than it will for Chris Olave and the New Orleans Saints offense. And the other thing, too, is, like, there is a human element to this, too, where, like, maybe Trevor Lawrence and Calvin Ridley had a hard time communicating. Maybe they, like, you never know. Maybe the style of quarterback that Levis is, it works better with Calvin Ridley. And people pretend that Calvin Ridley was, like, terrible last year when he was, like, he had five or six games of, like, 20 PPR points.
Exactly.
Like, he had big spike production. He was actually, like, a better in best ball kind of guy. So for me, I like that call. I am definitely not in disagreement here. I like Chris Olave sometimes when he falls in, like, early third round.
Agreed.
But I would also rather have Calvin Ridley in, like, the sixth round where you have to take him.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that as well. So
awesome. So we're going to have the Land Guys on next. Stay tuned for that.
Now we're sitting down with the Land Guys all the way from Australia. Let me know, who are you fading early to draft later? We'll start with Madake.
Okay.
Yeah, for me, is at the tight end position. So Sam Laporta, I mean, he's normally the first guy off the board at the tight end position. But there's so many guys that you can go that you can potentially favor over Sam Laporta because of their value and the upside and expectation in coming into this year. So obviously Sam Laporta, depending on your leagues, normally going at the end of the second round, sometimes he slips into the third round, even though, I mean, even then he is the first tight end off the board. But that list goes on for tight ends that I'm actually targeting. It can go from Dalton Kincaid, who's going in the fourth round, Mark Andrews, who's going in the fourth round.
Kyle Pitts.
Kyle Pitts, Evan Ingram. I mean, I'll even go all the way down
Trey McBride.
To Jake Ferguson with his that offense and all the question marks with CeeDee Lamb. So there are so many tight ends right now that are going from rounds, you know, five to potentially even eight. George Kittle, who I didn't even mention. Brandon Ayuk, we don't know if he's going to go to the Pittsburgh Steelers or stay, whatever that may be. All these guys have the potential upside to finish as a top five tight end. And you're getting Sam Laporta at his absolute ceiling right now. So I'm fading Sam Laporta right now.
Yeah, and adding to that take, I actually really like the direction you're there, because Sam Laporta is a guy that if he's at the end of the third, early fourth, I'm willing to take. But like you said, 2-3 turn. I mean, this is a video that's basically strictly off of opportunity cost. If you're comparing opportunity bundles of a second, third round receiver or running back plus a fifth or sixth round tight end, I much prefer that. Like you said, guys like Dalton Kincaid, Kyle Pitts, Mark Andrews, and even later on if you do punt the position, as long as you get a top 10 guy down to like Jake Ferguson, Brock Bowers, David Njoku, I do really like my teams more. So I would, you know, kind of fight back on it, but I actually do agree with the sentiment that I would fade Sam Laporta early, knowing the RB and wide receiver profiles in that range.
Exactly. It's not that Sam Laporta is not going to get the same amount of workload or the expectation is going to be the same, but in that at that 2-3 turn, I mean, at the moment, you're probably thinking of Deebo Samuel, Devon Achane, you know, sometimes Nico Collins is there at the 2-3 turn. It's like, can I solidify maybe my wide receiver 2, my wide receiver 1, my RB 1, my RB 2, depending how you're building your team there, and then saying, you know what, let me get these one positions that still have that top 5 potential finish at rounds 4 or later. So I think it's common sense at the moment.
The one thing I think you might say is an exception to this is if you're in a start 7 and you want to start that
a shallow lineup,
1,000%.
Right? So
More so deep lineups for those wondering.
Yeah,
for sure. What about you, Zach?
All right. Well, I might break America's heart because I feel like this is America's quarterback to me. Like if I was to say who's America's quarterback right now, it feels like this is it. So I'm sorry, but C.J. Stroud. I know he's the coolest guy. We all love him. How good was he? How cool does he look? His relationship with Tank Dell. You know, one of the best rookie seasons ever. I think Herbert's season was still better, but we're not going to fight on that.
Dak?
Look. Well, look, I just think with C.J. Stroud, there are options that are going to give you a similar outcome way, way down the board. We're talking Joe Burrow, Jordan Love, Brock Purdy. C.J. is going 23 picks before Burrow, 40 picks before Jordan Love, and 57 picks before Brock Purdy. C.J. Stroud, early round 5. Burrow, round 7. Love, round 8. Purdy, round 9. In my home leagues, those guys are going even later. Here's the deal. These are all pocket passers. Like, there's no rushing upside to any one of these quarterbacks. None of them are going to give you 10 rushing touchdowns, 1,000 rushing yards. They're all going to score fantasy points the same way, which is by throwing the ball, you know, high yardage, a lot of touchdowns through the air, and they're all on very good offenses. Yeah, C.J. Stroud's got Tank Dell. He's got Stephon Diggs. He's got Nico Collins. All right, well, who's Joe Burrow have? Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, right? Yeah. Who does Jordan Love have? Jaden Reed, Watson, Dobbs, Wicks, Jacobs. Who does Purdy have? We know who Brock Purdy has in his offense, right? So I definitely get where everyone's coming from. I just think you're getting something very similar way down the board, and it's not like Jordan Love is now 35 years old, and you got to worry about the age. He's a young player, just got a new contract. You don't have to worry about Brock Purdy. He's a young player on a very good team. So I just think you're getting, on a points per game basis, something similar down the board. Last year, Stroud averaged the 7th most points per game. Love and Purdy both averaged more than him. I don't know. I just feel like you're getting something similar way down the board.
Yeah, and I actually like that take as well. Now, C.J. Stroud would be the preferred option of that group, like you said, but it's more so the discrepancy in terms of tiers that the market kind of values them at. With C.J. Stroud, like you said, going way higher than those names. You didn't mention Dak Prescott as well, within that range. Nah. Just the pocket passer archetype.
No, he's fine.
No, I have to make everything about Dak. I mean, I'm a Cowboys fan for a reason, but all jokes aside, I mean, the pocket passers with great insulation in the passing game, you know, 30-plus passing touchdown, 4,500-plus passing air type of upside, paying you know, 2-3 rounds higher for CJ Stroud when, like we kind of mentioned, the running backs, the wide receivers start to get scarce around the round 7, round 8 area. It just, for me, feels like a sunk cost at that point when I can wait on Dak, Love, Purdy, like you said, Joe Burrow a little later on. So I'm in full agreement. I think, again, I would agree that the Texans' offensive situation is the best of that group, but is it 2 rounds higher? I would.
Yeah. I was just going to say real quick, I've said this on my channel before, and a reply that had a lot of likes was, well, he's going to lead the league in passing yards and maybe passing touchdowns. And I was like, well, Tua just did that last year. He led the league in passing yards. He has incredible wide receivers. So I don't know that that's the exact argument we want to make. Throw Tua on the list. If you're going to punt the position way further down, you might be able to get Tua 7 rounds after CJ Stroud goes off the board.
Jared Goff even.
I was going to add, what about, like, all right, it's a bit riskier, but Jaden Daniels with the rushing upside. I mean, that is, once again, you don't know what that's going to look like. But with that that ceiling and especially the floor, what we're expecting with Jaden Daniels, why not take the risk if
you can go Daniels and Goff if you want
to. Sure, Daniels, exactly. I mean, solidify somebody that you might feel a little bit more comfortable with.
All right, so appreciate the domain and the land guys for hopping on, but we do have to give you guys our takes. We're doing this whole opportunity cost discussion. We're talking about what guys we don't like drafting early on that we do like drafting later on. And this one kind of doesn't really follow the same trend because I actually really do like drafting this first guy, but I think you're getting a similar archetype in round 4 typically in most of your drafts, and that's, why would you draft Jahmyr Gibbs, who has a hamstring injury at the late first round pick, when you could draft James Cook in the 4th round? Because James Cook and Jahmyr Gibbs are both the same level of concern that you have for each player is, are they going to get the goal line work? Are they going to be the guy in the red zone? Because in Jahmyr Gibbs' case, you have David Montgomery. In James Cook's case, you have a quarterback and Josh Allen and potentially Ray Davis to take away those touches. But both guys have been hyper-efficient, and Cook actually more so than Gibbs as a receiver. Both guys could potentially be top targets in their offense. With James Cook, you got a third-year guy, really showed a lot of promise down the stretch last year. And I can get this guy after drafting 2 great wide receivers at the tail end of the first round, for example, maybe an elite tight end or an elite quarterback, and still get an anchor running back in round 4, who I think really does have a similar case to Jahmyr Gibbs. And I love Jahmyr Gibbs. I think pound for pound, he's the better player. But James Cook is in a just as good of an offense with the same real skill set and level of opportunity ahead of him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's an implausible take, obviously, from an archetype standpoint, from an offensive insulation standpoint. Both are projected to be, you know, receiving talents and great offenses. The one thing I will say is, week 7 on, we did actually see Jahmyr Gibbs get a level of goal line work that we haven't seen from James Cook yet. So I understand why Jahmyr Gibbs going where he's going. But at the same time, I think it's more a pro James Cook take. If James Cook does receive more goal line work, I mean, we saw last year in the last 7 games, scored 4 of his 6 seasonal touchdowns. We do see a potential RB1 level ceiling. So it's not necessarily a fade Gibbs take if you guys are at home. It's more so just, if James Cook has fallen to you in the 4th round and we're getting a legitimate RB1 profile, to be taking him in that spot.
Yeah, I mean, same goes for Achane too. Like, we talked about Achane already, but Gibbs and Achane and Cook, these guys all have the same real concerns, which is like there's a thumper early down goal line pounder on their offense, and all of them kind of have the same. They need to be efficient. They're in really good offenses. And James Cook too, like, to your point, you said week 7 on for Jahmyr Gibbs. Well, once Joe Brady took over the offense for James Cook, he was more involved in the red zone as well. So with all of these guys, you can, and Cook too, the word around Bill's camp has been, this guy's taking a step forward. He's added a little bit of weight. Maybe he's ready and up for the challenge of being the lead back there. So I think with Cook, again, it's more of a pro James Cook take in the 4th round. If you want to do those modified double hero RBs like we talk about, grab an anchor running back round 1 or 2, grab some wide receivers in between there, and grab James Cook. I feel like you're getting a guy who's, I have ranked as a top 11 running back in fantasy this year, in going in the dead zone, who I don't see as a dead zone profile one bit.
Yeah, and we've often cited that the 9 to 12 range is the weak range of your drafts this year. If you guys watch the 9 to 12 strategy, we actually mentioned that. But the one caveat I will say is, if you do a modified double hero RB, and you can start in home leagues, Garrett Wilson, Jahmyr Gibbs, potentially even like a falling Nico Collins or Jalen Waddle, and then wrap back around and get James Cook, I mean, that's basically just hitting the nuts from that spot.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Danny, what do you got? Let's close this out here.
I have talked a lot of crap on Keenan Allen before, and I've talked a lot of praise on JSN, but the fact that there's such a discrepancy in their home league market value makes no sense to me. I would straight up rather have JSN, and he goes later than Keenan Allen in your home leagues. I understand, you know, potentially the concerns. Obviously, Keenan Allen, we saw last year, be a top 5 receiver in points per game. JSN, a little bit of a struggle in his rookie season. But the reason why I'm making this comparison is, obviously, you know, Shane Waldron's the common factor. Shane Waldron, obviously, coaching JSN last year, goes to the Bears this offseason. But really, it's the slot wide receiver with 3 wide receivers on that team. With JSN, We saw this offseason, we've heard all the reports from Ryan Grubb that he's taken a step in terms of being used dynamically all across the field. Last year, very low A-dot player. Wasn't necessarily that archetype coming out of Ohio State. So for me with JSN, it's more so a pro-JSN take. I think going into year two, expanding that route tree, we both believe in the Seahawks offense. Obviously, Washington last year in the college football season ranked top 10 in both deep throw rate and in terms of pass rate over expectation. I think Ryan Grubb brings an element to this offense we haven't seen, not to mention underrated stat in the preseason, 70% motion rate from the Seattle Seahawks. So this isn't your boring old school Seahawks offense we saw from last year. I really do think they take that dynamic step up, and JSN's a big reason why.
Yeah, I think the big crucial difference between these two guys, too, is JSN's the ascending player. Keenan Allen is the descending player. Not to mention there's another descending player on the Seahawks offense in Tyler Lockett versus the ascending player, probably, that Romo Odunze and DJ Moore, obviously, just a wide receiver in his prime in that situation. So, yeah, Keenan Allen, I'm actually, it's definitely an anti-Keenan Allen take as well. We definitely are not huge Keenan Allen guys, basically, for all the reasons we mentioned so far, and all the vibes and smell tests that we've seen the preseason so far has not been good either. But, yeah, JSN, again, the people who are against him will say he had a bad rookie season. He definitely did. It was definitely not what we wanted to see from him. But the individual like charting that Matt Harmon did kind of opened my eyes to it, where it's like this guy was getting open. He was doing what he was supposed to do. He was just kind of misutilized. And Shane Waldron, too, is now operating the Bears Keenan offense. Allen. So if he's a problem and he used Keenan Allen or JSN wrong, well, is he going to use Keenan Allen the same way? Is he going to be undervalued for fantasy? Plus, you also have an experienced veteran quarterback with JSN versus a rookie with Caleb Williams. Like, I think Caleb Williams is a better quarterback than Geno Smith is, but at least early on in the year, you could see Caleb Williams potentially struggle a little bit of growing pains early on.
Yeah, and the final thing I'll make on Keenan Allen, obviously reports 230 pounds. If you watch his game film, all 22 axis, you do see a player that, quite frankly, I mean, JT O'Sullivan basically was the guy that was roasting Adam Thielen last year. He had a lot of Adam Thielen. He was sluggish moving down the field from the slot. Didn't look like that prototype Keenan Allen. Now, he's never been a burner, but he legitimately looks slow. And I mean, if the weighted reports that he's 230 pounds are true, it makes sense why he looks as slow as he does.
Yeah, for sure. So we brought you guys basically six players to avoid and six players to target. Similar profiles, similar nature to that. We didn't agree on everything, but that's why we get multiple opinions over here. And that's why we're here in Austin making a bunch of content with a bunch of cool people. So if you guys enjoyed, obviously check out all the land and all the domain content linked down below in the description. Like this video if you enjoyed. Subscribe. Check out our draft guide if you want all of our opinions, all of our rankings, all that good stuff. That will be linked down below in the pinned comment as well. But with that being said, peace out. We'll talk to you soon.